The Man David by Brother Harry Tennant, Chapter 4 continued. Saul's regret of his defeat of David includes once more a confession of his folly. Again he had broken his oath in a vain attempt to find the man whom the Lord had hidden. Several of the words of David at this time are illuminating. He said, "For they have driven me out this day from abiding in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, Go serve other gods." 1 Samuel 26, verse 19. There's no direct evidence that Saul and his associates consciously thought that they were driving David to idolatry. Indeed, the king had such slender connections with the God of Israel that he was incapable of appreciating that David's exile was from the spiritual life of Israel and was therefore tantamount to an invitation to find other gods to worship. Saul would have been a dead man that night had not David's heart been the abode of God's righteousness. "This is that the Lord spake, saying, A man after mine own heart." Confidence in God and in the victory of his truth kept David in the path of right. "The Lord render to every man his righteousness and his faithfulness. As by Saul's life was much set by this day in mine eyes, so let my life be much set by in the eyes of the Lord, and let him deliver me out of all tribulation." 1 Samuel 26, verse 23. These are marvellous words from a man ostracised from society, from worship, and from the peace of settled family life. They are proof once more that peace of mind and beauty of spirit can come by chastening and suffering. David the outcast was in communion with God. Saul the king was an outcast from the fellowship of life. He parts from David for the last time. The hunt is over and the prey is still at large. Moreover, the hunter goes home confessing defeat. "Blessed be thou, my son David, thou shalt do great things, and also thou shalt prevail." 1 Samuel 26, verse 25. Out of this experience and the assurance of the Lord's care and protection, it would have been natural had we found David resting in quiet confidence, awaiting the final deliverance which must surely come. But instead there's a strange turn of events which has the appearance of the sagging of his faith. In his heart he said, "I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul." With a clearer light he would understand that this could not be. But the long period of stress, he was in his 29th year, and the lack of light at the end of the long tunnel made hope dim. David was human. "It is your father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom, a promise as fine as any made to David, save that which promised Messiah himself, and has been given to everyone who has received the true call and answered it. Does it prevent us from slipping into the abyss of despair or doubt? How many of us have to admit that we have well nigh given up hope on more than one occasion? We do not doubt that God is true and faithful. Inwardly we believe the sure and great things by which and to which we've been called. But suddenly faith sags at the knees and we slip back towards the darkness. Let us take consolation that those who have gone before have experienced just this and have come through. When I said, my foot slippeth, thy mercy, O Lord, held me up." We each have to discover the truth of these words of Psalm 94, verse 18. David and his 600 passed from the land of Judea to the place to which he'd been sent by Gad, the seer, down to Gath. It was a kind of migration, since by this time there were households, wives, and, no doubt, children amongst David's number. His own two wives made the long downward journey a journey of despair. Saul gave up the search, and David was given Ziklag, a former city of Judah, now belonging to the Philistines, in which to settle. It was probably more or less a ruin when David took it over. Southwards were the Amalekites and associated Nomadic tribes, and away to the north was Judah. Life was uncertain, and it was unsafe merely to rely on the planting of crops and the normal pursuits of agriculture. Instead, David resorted to raids on the southern tribes, vicious raids in which were no survivors left to tell the tale to Achish, King of Gath. He was encouraged to think that David had been raiding Judah, but the subterfuge and the butchery ill became a man who loved mercy and truth. But when faith slips, the ship drifts near to the rocks of sin, and there was worse to come. During the 16 months in Gath, David had won the affection of the King of Gath, but there is no record of any psalm composed during this latter sojourn in the land of Philistines. Achish regarded David as a partner and would have made him a keeper of his head. And it was in this spirit that Achish and the lords of the Philistines set out to engage the Israelites in battle and took David with them. The 600 fighting men of Ziklag marched north with Israel's enemies. This was a far cry from the day when David accepted Goliath's challenge, a sorry distance from the time when the uncircumcised Philistine and his gods roused David to fight on behalf of the living God of the armies of Israel. Of course, circumstances were different. Israel was in a decline and ripe for the judgments of God. But this was no excuse for David to march with the enemy. What thoughts engaged his mind? What torment of conscience racked the inner calm of the man who had been void of offence? He was torn between the two. His faithfulness in Ziklag, even though it disguised some deeds which would have displeased his benefactor, had won the trust of Achish. How could he be faithful to God and to Achish? Perhaps it was this dilemma which brought David back to seek God's guidance and deliverance. Perhaps his plans were already laid and he would have emerged faithful to Israel and its God. This we do not know. But the army of David, the little army, had some interesting elements. Recruits had arrived from other places. There were men from Benjamin, Saul's own tribe, who'd come over to him in Ziklag, and a number of men from other tribes, fighting men and brave men. Amongst them, men who'd swum across Jordan when it was flowing in flood. In addition, David seems to have had Philistine recruits, if Ittai the Gittite is representative of others. There was about the appearance of David and his men something which created disquiet in the minds of the lords of the Philistines. They inquired of Achish, "What do these Hebrews here?" The answer was a testimony to David's faithfulness, but this was insufficient to allay the fears of men whose memories went back to David's exploits in the days of Goliath, and they made it plain that they did not trust him to remain loyal in time of battle. Their words were sharp and persistent. Achish had no option but to dismiss David and his men from the company. And this was a providential stroke, and it delivered David from a problem as big as Goliath. Despite his protests of faithful service, he was turned back at Aphek, probably the Aphek in Ephraim, about halfway between the land of the Philistines and the place where the Israelites were pitched in the valley of Jezreel. And thus were broken forever David's links with the Philistines. The first steps to a recovery of a balanced spiritual outlook had been aided by the intervention of the Lord God in the affairs of the man he loved. As he said farewell to Achish and turned southwards, the full meaning of this turning point in his life would begin to dawn. Strangely enough, he was in no man's land. The crisis had arrived for Saul and Jonathan and for Israel, and he had no part in it, neither as part of the force of the enemy, nor as part of the host of his own people. And this was the Lord's doing. And one wonders what the outcome would have been if David had returned to his own country in its hour of need. Instead, he marched southwards along the Shephelah, the lowlands of the coast, towards Ziklag, to be reunited with his wives. Soldiers the world over rejoiced to come home. They climbed from the plain into the hills where Ziklag stood and were ready to greet it as they approached. But instead, as their eyes strained to catch the first glimpse of the town, there was a dark scar on the horizon and smoke from the embers of a great fire. Nothing remained. The whole town had been sacked and destroyed. There were no signs of life. The worst fears beat at the breasts of the 600 and they broke down in bitter weeping, with hope gone and their spirits broken. Some voices levelled complaints against David, and for a while there were evil words, with more than a hint of stoning their leader. The men felt that some action, some reprisal was necessary to vent their sense of grief and dreadful loss. And for some, David was the obvious target. He showed no fear. Emergency and the need for decision were like a spur to David. And what is more, at this crucial time, he turned in the right direction. Rejected by the Philistines, doubted by some of his men, without home and family, he strengthened himself in the Lord his God. There was no other arm on which to lean, no other guide to bring him out of the darkness, no other comfort than Yahweh, the God of covenant and consolation. David called for Abiathar and the precious ephod and sought counsel of the Lord. Should he pursue the raiders, the Amalekites, and would he overtake them? The answer was more than he expected. Not only would he find the enemy, but he would recover all that was lost. Quickly he rallied his men, and it is to their credit that they responded, despite the fact that they were tired and dispirited. They marched with a will, gazing ahead for the signs of horsemen or camels in the distance. 10 or 20 miles went by, and 200 of the men were faint and could go no further. It was determined to leave them with all unnecessary impedimenta on the bank of the brook Besor, for they had not the strength to cross over. But the 400 with David passed on. His strength in the Lord sustained him. Still they looked for telltale signs, and eventually came across a young Egyptian who had not eaten or drunk for 3 days. He turned out to be a servant of the Amalekites, who had been left to die when he fell sick on his journey from Ziklag. This lack of human compassion cost the raiders all that they had gained in battle. Revived by food and drink, the young man led David and his men to the enemy camp. The scene was one of festivity and celebration. They had raided a much wider area than Ziklag, and their spoil was considerable. Some were in the camp were Abigail and Ahinoam, the wives of David, and similarly each man thought of those dear to him in the hands of strangers. Quickly they took stock of the position, arranged their tactics, and at twilight descended on the host. The engagement continued throughout the night and into the next day. The confusion must have been considerable, and the need for care to distinguish friend from foe provided an additional hazard. At last, the enemy yielded, although 400 escaped on camels, a sorry remnant of the jubilant army of the day before. Families were reunited, and the great spoil remained, and slowly the victorious band made their way back to Ziklag. At the brook Besor, they met the men who'd remained behind, and some of the fighters were not disposed to share the booty with their weaker brethren. This selfishness sprang from the wicked men and men of Belial amongst David's forces. No doubt these had been the prime movers in the urge to stone David, and their hopes were dashed on returning to Ziklag from the march with the Philistines. But David would have none of this meanness of spirit. It was utterly foreign to his spontaneously gracious and open-handed nature. The spoil was to be divided equally with the men who'd protected the baggage, and the statute was laid down as a precedent. Its roots lay in Numbers 31 verse 27 and Joshua 22 verse 8, which David knew well enough.